Station of the AFN. This is the White House in Washington calling. I present the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the Convention of the Alaska Federation of Navies. I want you to be among the first to know that I have just signed the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. This is a milestone in Alaska's history.
The corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years.
The Reverend Mercurio from St. George Island.
This land of Alaska, which thou gave to our ancestors who had come and gone before us, is now being handed to us a second time by the act of the United States Congress and our untiring efforts. A second chance is given to us by thee to be the new custodians and caretakers.
It is indeed with great pleasure and honor that I have this privilege of calling the 15th Annual Convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives commemorating the 10th anniversary of the passage of the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act to order. First, on behalf of the Alaska Federation of Natives, its board of directors, and its president, I would like to take this opportunity of welcoming each and every delegate, each and every attendee, each and every student that's here attending this very memorable moment.
A blue banner with the state of Alaska in gold hung on the wall behind Alaska Federation of Natives Chairman Nelson Ongapuk as he called the convention to order on December 16, 1981. Three interlocking rings were superimposed on the state, the top one bearing the word Eskimo, the one on the right labeled Indian, and the ring on the left Aleut, signifying the unity of the ethnic groups that comprise Alaska's natives and the membership of the AFN. In 1966, 99 years after the transfer of Alaska to the United States, the Alaska Federation of Natives first met to plan a unified effort to obtain a settlement for land claimed by Alaska's Aboriginal peoples. Scarcely more than 5 years later, in December 1971, convention delegates voted to accept the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, negotiated by AFN representatives, special interest groups, notably oil companies, and Congress. That bill provided for 12 in-state regional corporations to distribute the terms of the settlement, 44 million acres of land and nearly $1 billion in exchange for relinquishing further claims to the land. But there was no provision for the continuation of the statewide group that had lobbied for and won the bill. This program, the ninth in a 10-part series, The Corporate Whale, will examine the role of the Alaska Federation of Natives and its efforts to survive and continue to be a unifying body for the corporations who manage ANCSA's benefits. AFN's first president, Emil Noddy.
Bob Bennett was area director for DIA in Alaska. He went back and was sworn in as commissioner. So in April of 1966, Bob Bennett issued his report to the Senate Interior Committee, telling what he was going to do to solve the Indian problem in America. In that report, he devoted half a page to Alaska and said that the Bureau of Indian Affairs was drawing up a final solution to the land problem in Alaska. I read that report and got to thinking, if the BIA was going to draw up a final solution, then the Indian people ought to have something to say about it.
Noddy, then president of the Cook Inlet Native Association, wrote letters to leaders around the state, solicited funds, and organized the first meeting of what became the Alaska Federation of Natives. He expected less than 24 people to attend. 300 showed up. He was president of the Alaska Federation of Natives from April 1966 until October 1970, and he faced the challenge of getting Native groups whose ancestors sometimes traded and often fought to work together.
You know, history isn't that old. I was talking to Willie Hensley one day, and when I was a kid, we trapped up the Kaibab River, and I said, you know, we were always afraid of those fierce Eskimos of the Kobuk Valley. And he, in turn, said when he was a kid, his parents told him, you know, don't go over to the Kaibab River drainage because there's Indians over there. So there was some of that, and then there is some of that, but it's disappearing. It was very difficult to pull people together to form a statewide group and work together for a common cause. And we had some very hot meetings. We were dealing with some tough issues as well as all the regional, I don't want to say animosities, but regional differences.
Early versions of the Land Claims Settlement Bill provided for the continuation of at least one statewide coordinating organization, with the bulk of the entitlement going to villages, not regions as mandated by the act now in effect. Willie Hensley, a former state legislator, now president of the United Bank Alaska and chairman of NANA Development Corporation, joined with Noddy in the early days of congressional negotiation.
I think that the lack of a statewide entity of some sort, I think, maybe was a mistake. But, you know, we never had the luxury of being able to think everything through. You know, many of us were young. We were going at 50 miles an hour all the time, trying to stay on top of things. Many of us didn't have the benefit of wise counsel, you know, from elders. And things were moving too fast. It was like being on top of a wave with a little surfboard, you know, trying to stay on top of it or get engulfed by it.
Lee Gorsuch, now director of the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research, came to Alaska in 1970 as an economic planner with the Ford Foundation.
There was a great deal of fear that somehow a statewide Native corporation could subvert the intentions and will of the individual Native corporations. And there was also a feeling within the state of Alaska that a large Native, statewide Native corporation could serve as a threat and represent a third form of government in Alaska. So the fact that the Native leadership itself had its own misgivings about the notion of a statewide corporation combined with the opposition of the state pretty much was a conclusive element that no one in Congress was going to go out on a limb arguing for a statewide corporation if neither the state of Alaska nor the Native leadership wanted one. And there was growing suspicion in the 11th hour of the negotiations that somehow having this funnel at the top could subvert the actual flow of funds down to the 12 corporations. It was a chance that many of the Native regional leaders did not want to take and therefore eliminated it.
An act that almost eliminated the Alaska Federation of Natives entirely. Without an economic base, the organization that formed to lobby for land claim settlement went through tough times once the act became law. Willie Hensley became the organization's unpaid president. The AFN was in debt, and for 6 months he was unsalaried. Former Alaska Vista volunteer John Shively, now NANA Development Corporation's vice president for operations, served as the AFN's executive vice president.
The power sort of changed from AFN that had been sort of the leading spokesman organization for Native people during the Settlement Act, and that power changed to regional corporations, to a certain extent village corporations also, but primarily the leaders who began to have the money and the leadership. And I think it's quite possible that AFN could have died. And what saved AFN was the federal government, and not on purpose, of course, as usual, but the federal government in 1972 and 73 tried to rewrite the Claims Act by regulations and essentially take what had been won away. And Native leaders throughout the state began to understand that what they won, although it was a difficult battle, might not be half as hard as keeping they thought they'd won. And that brought people back together again, and I think it's kept them together.
Not that togetherness has been the theme of the Alaska Federation of Natives. Although a dues structure for membership was first approved in December 1973, achieving some financial base for the organization, not all eligible regional Native corporations have elected to join and work within the structure. Some corporations, such as Arctic Slope and the Aleut Corporation, have been in and out of the AFN. Recent changes in the bylaws now permit both regional profit and nonprofit corporations to join, and by the time of the December 1981 AFN convention, all 12 in-state profit corporations were members. At the convention, AFN Chairman Nelson Ongapa.
For the first time in several years, the all of the 12 regional corporations that were formed pursuant to the Land Claim Settlement Act are represented in this convention. The Aleut Corporation has rejoined AFN, and at this point, I would very much like to give welcome to Aleut rejoining the group.
Still, one Native corporation is not a member. The ANCSA Optional, Seattle-based 13th Regional Corporation for Alaska Natives living outside the state. They have petitioned for membership and been denied. Janie Leisk is the AFN's Executive Vice President.
There are a lot of hard feelings between the regional corporations and the 13th Region when it came down to re-enrollment, when enrollment came up again. And the 13th Region really had it pushed hard to get the shareholders from the regional corporations.
In addition, the in-state regional corporations are land-based, unlike the 13th, now seeking a piece of the land entitlement. It puts that corporation on the outs of an organization that seeks a unified approach to land issues, AFN's primary focus. With a large board of directors representing different ethnic groups and geographic areas of the state, achieving unity requires a good deal of internal politics.
The Tlingits certainly have different ways of running businesses and running their corporations than maybe some of the Eskimos do. And just the personalities and the traits of the people are a lot different.
These differences can lead to splits away from AFN.
We're an organization who represents, if not all of the Alaska Natives, then we represent the majority of them. If AFN ever existed to where there was maybe 4 or 5 regional corporations that were out of AFN, then maybe we would have to reassess it. But with maybe one corporation out, which is the case, then we still feel that we pack a punch back in Washington, speaking with one organization for all the corporations. Right now we have a Washington, D.C. representative, Dennis Tippelman. We felt it was really important due to the federal cutbacks affecting the nonprofit, and in addition to any other kind of information, just to keep on top of legislation, just to keep on top of the different issues.
My job.
AFN Washington D.C. Representative Dennis Tippelman.
Check every conceivable document that might have a notice of proposed rule, whether it's in the Federal Register or a notice into the House or Senate side as far as which legislation has been introduced. And then to maintain a list of contacts as far as the players that are involved and what they might be doing over the course of the year. So sometimes my job is to read, research, and other times it's to meet with people and convince them of who the Native corporations are and what it is that they're doing, and try to secure something that is maybe favorable to their viewpoint. And if it's helpful for the Native corporations and for the Alaska Federation of Natives, because some of this information they get, but they might get it through the mails a few weeks or several days too late. And by me researching it here constantly on a daily basis, I can get to them and alert them to information that might have relevance to them by just making a phone call.
Tippelman's recent phone calls relate to Congress's current budget-cutting move, which significantly affects Native American programs.
We've been relatively comfortable and have found services pretty easy up until the 70s. This is the first time that the 80s look like we're going to have some tough times, and I think it's realistic, not entirely appropriate, but something that can allow us to become better survivors in the 20th century world.
You've been listening to The Corporate Whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years, the 9th program in a 10-part series written and produced by Karen Michelle McPherson, with technical assistance from Phil Falkowski. Funding was provided by KUAC sponsors and the Alaska Native Human Resources Development Program of the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. Special thanks to Tim Frasca and musicians Herbie Vent, Buddy Tabor, the Kotzebue Northern Lights dancers. Cassette copies of this program are available from Educational Media Services, SR Box 20155, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701.